Hello, welcome to Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, your monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. I'm Sandy Harper here with my partner Dick Reichman and welcoming our guest back to Alaska, Suhaila Elatar. Welcome back to Alaska.
Thank you. Suhaila. I know. I'm all excited. Yeah. I know my way around now. I'm very, very excited. I feel like I'm here.
So. That's great. Well, for those who might not recall or do recall, Suhaila was the playwright of The Perfect Prayer, which we produced last year, which was a very exciting event. But she's also a wonderful actress. And so she's here now as the guest artist for the upcoming show, The Clean House at Cyrano's. But Suhaila, it wasn't so easy to get here, was it?
Oh, no. The audition was just the easy part. Getting here was quite interesting. I was supposed to arrive on August 10th into the 11th at midnight here. But when I landed, I was going to go Atlanta to Phoenix, Phoenix to Anchorage. When I landed at Phoenix, I got the information that due to volcanic activity, my flight would be canceled. And I thought, okay, well, there's a good reason for that. So I waited it out, spent the night in the Phoenix airport, and thought the next morning I would be going Phoenix to Las Vegas, Las Vegas to Anchorage. And when I got on the Las Vegas flight, we were immediately exited for mechanical failure or mechanical problems on the Vegas flight. And they said, we need you to come up to the counter if you have a connecting flight in Vegas. So I go up to the counter, and while I'm standing there, I tell the woman behind the counter, hi, I have a connecting flight to Anchorage. And she says with that flight attendant smile, not flight attendant smile, but ticket agent smile, mm-hmm. where you know they're stressed beyond belief. She says with that smile, and you know she's thinking, keep smiling, she says, no flights are going to Anchorage. And I said, I understand that, but you told me to come to you for a connecting flight, and I'm going to Anchorage. And she goes, no flights are going to Anchorage. And we sat there for a minute and looked at each other, and I said to her, you mean ever again? And she goes, I could tell she was ready to choke me, so I dropped it. She told me to go to customer service, and I did that. Meanwhile, the Vegas flight did take off with my bag, and then I was stuck in Phoenix. So then I got to San Francisco. It's a long story. And then went from San Francisco back to Phoenix to Anchorage. A week later, and here I am.
It is an odyssey.
I know, it is.
And did you get your luggage?
Oh, yes, eventually. My luggage actually made it to Anchorage before I did, and then came back to me, and then came back with me, so that's a good thing. And we won't mention what airline it was, because that would be bad.
To be nameless. But a lot of
did they charge you for the bag?
No, they did not. I will tell you that. So that eliminates a couple of them.
Free
right
transport
there.
On the bag.
Yeah. That's the most expensive bag ever, so yeah.
Well, you know, we are very fortunate because Suhaila has actually played the part in Atlanta that she's going to play for us.
Yes, for The Clean House.
I mean, she knows her lines. But it's a whole fresh, unique production, as
Absolutely.
Every production is.
Absolutely. I think what's really interesting to note is that I did the audition for Cyrano's before I did the audition for Horizon Theater.
Right.
And was cast by Cyrano's before I was cast by Horizon.
That's right. So we knew you were the perfect person for this part.
God willing, from your mouth to God's ear. But the production for Atlanta ran through the month of June. And so it's still pretty fresh with me with the lines and things like that. But the challenge as an actress is coming in and making sure I didn't memorize a role. Mm-hmm. Because if I walk in and I do that with the cast here in Anchorage, I'm not going to do them any justice. And I'm certainly not going to do the script any justice.
You could tell us a little about the script, because it is written by Sarah Rule, who's like one of the hottest, newest playwrights in the country
fantastic.
Right now.
Fantastic. Pretty intelligent writer. It's a fantastic script. I think one of the quotes from Sarah Rule that is being oft used is she says she likes to write people saying ordinary things in extraordinary situations or extraordinary things in ordinary situations. And I think The Clean House completely embodies that. I think it plays off of, as you're watching the story unfold, it plays off of what the audience naturally accepts mm-hmm. and what you think are the parameters on stage and what you give as your suspension of disbelief. So the moment Rule crosses over those borders, you go, great. As an audience member, you go, oh, my God, so I didn't have to buy that. I'm okay believing this. So, yeah.
Yeah, it describes a surreal comedy set in metaphysical Connecticut.
Metaphysical Connecticut, which is redundant when you think about it. Right.
Maybe you could share a little bit about what the play is about, the script, and also your character.
I feel it is the most dangerous thing to try to summarize the story of this script because it does encompass all sorts of things. When Rule went to write the script, she was originally inspired by overhearing a conversation at a party, one of the upper class parties, and hearing a certain class of woman complaining about her Brazilian housemaid who has decided to stop cleaning. And she, I think what, I'm going to speak for Rule, so Sarah, if you can hear me, I'm really sorry. I think what she was inspired by was taking a look at the class differences. And the play starts off with that and then just kind of goes into romance, love, marriage, life, death, and the importance of a perfect joke, by all means. That's where Michilji comes in, which is the role that I'm playing. She is the Brazilian housemaid who has decided that she doesn't like cleaning houses and that she would, what's really more important to her is finding the perfect joke. And the audience kind of joins her on that journey. And through that journey, she gets to see the journey of Lane, Virginia, Charles, and Anna. So.
And there are jokes involved in this play.
There are a lot of jokes.
Funny.
Yes, yes.
And I think also contemporary women can very much relate to the roles, especially Lane, for example.
Very much so. Very much so. I mean, Lane is a woman who's come from the generation where she put her career first, and this is what strength meant, and this is what marriage meant, and love meant. And all of a sudden, when she thought everything was concrete, she's introduced to a new redefinition of it. So.
And just a little sidebar for everybody, some of the principals are having to take tango lessons.
Yes. Yeah, it's a fantastic cast here, too, and it's just a fun script.
We are very lucky with the talent in Anchorage. And by the way, this is Suhaila's third trip to Alaska.
That is correct.
The last one was to conduct a workshop, a facilitated workshop, inspired by the book Growing Up Native in Alaska.
Yes.
Which was an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, we used Celeste Miller's method of how to learn to tell stories, which is it's an odd phrase, but for some people who don't believe that they're storytellers or people who don't believe that they're performers or writers, when you're having to put them on stage and telling them this is what you're going to do, Celeste Miller's method was perfect to kind of ease people into it and surprise themselves with it. So, yeah.
Well, Growing Up Native in Alaska was a major success. It really was.
And I'm so sorry I missed it.
I know. But the people involved have launched a Native theater company at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. And right now they're doing a play, which they develop, called Raven Radio. So you can feel like a distant godmother of that project
as well. You know, I don't even associate. I just say that you brought me here and I showed you guys some tools and then you guys ran with it. And it's fantastic for you guys. So I can't take any credit for anything.
But it was a great experience. And about Celeste Miller, I guess that you're going to have a reprise, you were telling me, of the experience.
Yes. Starting in 2004, the Synchronicity Performance Group based out of Atlanta organized a project called the Women in War Project. And what we did is we interviewed over 40 women in the Atlanta area that were involved with war in some fashion form or another. And that included refugees from Rwanda, Sudan, Palestine, Kuwait, all of these, Iraq, you name it, there they were. Former soldiers, former wives of soldiers from Vietnam, World War II, people who were descendants of grandparents who had been in concentration camps. And it's all of these women's stories come together. And it was definitely a huge experiment. And it became a documentary on stage. The major challenge that we found, we took the 40 interviews, we transcribed all of them, we took only these women's words, and we brought them together and tried to understand exactly what we wanted to do for the audience. And we just revealed these stories to the audience, and it was a huge success in Atlanta. And it was always thought to come back. It premiered in October of 2005. And most recently, Synchronicity Performance Group got another grant to create a touring script. We originally did it with 9 actresses. We would be slimming it down to 6 and touring it across the nation. for anybody who's interested in seeing
it. That is very, very exciting. And sadly, they'll have to update it to Iraqi experiences, I guess.
Right. We're going to keep it where it is right now because it does include, we do have a story from a female soldier who kept a blog. Who was one of the first females on the front line in Iraq. So she was there when Fallujah went down. She wasn't part of Fallujah, but it was so recent for her that she was active in other military excursions that happened. And her blog was so fantastic and so revealing that eventually the military asked her to take it down. But luckily, we had grabbed it and saved a lot of the writings before then. We got in contact with her, asked her for permission to use it. Hers was the only story that was not from an Atlanta-based female, but we just felt that it was extraordinarily important.
And that's really powerful. As a matter of fact, there was an article about this project in American Theater Magazine, and your name was in it. I know, Suhaila. And that was the inspiration for you coming to facilitate Growing Up Native in Alaska.
Yeah, that again was your idea. I mean, I wouldn't be here without you, Sandy.
So I'm so glad you're here. But I know you've been having further adventures in Atlanta as a playwright, too. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about the Alliance Fellowship.
Oh, I worked with the first year of the Alliance Theater's Playwriters Lab. And this was a 9-month project to basically create a place for local playwrights in Atlanta to come and have somewhere to talk. I called it our AA meeting. So that is writers, you could come into a room and go, how are you doing? Is it okay? You know, and you'd be like, I have writer's block. I'm doing this. But we also, Salisa Kalk, who is the literary manager for the Alliance Theater, said it was also to create think tanks to kind of also help the Alliance connect more to the local community. The Alliance is such a big theater. It's the largest in the Southeast. It stays that big, and it kind of looms over us. And I think they wanted to stop looming over us and be with us, which was very nice of them. Susan Booth being the artistic director, wanting to make that connection. And we did this for 9 months. We would meet once a month. We worked on new scripts. This is a way for us to talk and kind of share our ideas. Some of them were hard and some of them weren't. And that's where that went. So it was perfect.
But it did incubate new play ideas for you. And
I've had a couple of scripts that I've been working on. What it allowed me to do was move forward on them. It's very hard for me, despite being here first as a playwright. Anchorage you're sort of on your own in seeing me first as a playwright and then an actress, because I feel like an actress first and then a playwright. So this lab with the Alliance Theater enabled me to feel a little bit more like a writer. And that's what they wanted to do. So
that's very exciting.
Thank you.
It really is. Do you think that would be helpful to playwrights here if we had a think tank like that for playwrights to get together?
Oh, yeah. Any forum. Writers are sitting at their desks throwing things on a shelf.
If there's
anything else you could do instead of throwing it on the shelf and thinking about something else, that's great.
Well, and, you know, there would be great moments with a couple of the writers where, you know, one of them who would be sitting really quietly, you'd get to hear some of the private life stuff that was going on, why it was difficult to write. It's not just writers expounding ideas. Good God, that would drive me crazy. We do that enough anyway. But it's the idea of sitting with somebody and going, so what are you doing to get your play out? What are we supposed to do? How do agents work? How much do I need an agent?
Yeah, it's just the point, to be produced.
Right, exactly. Well, I need an agent if I'm in Atlanta? Yes. Am I a real writer if I've only been produced in Atlanta, if I've only been produced in Anchorage? Am I a real writer if I do I get to be real if I make it to New York? How many times do I have? And it was getting to find out you weren't alone, which it's such a solitary career that it was good to have that. That's why I called it our AA meetings. You know?
Well, I'm always curious what people are writing about. What are you writing about now?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Is that because it's incubating in your mind?
It's not that it's incubating. It's that it's been incubating, and I did speak about it. And now I think that the more I release it out, the less I put it on the paper. And that's my weakness, so I have to keep it to me. To get it on the
paper. But to know that is so important.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm 32. I'm catching on slowly to myself. So,
how old were you when you wrote The Perfect Prayer?
The first time? The first time I was 19. When I came back to it, I was 27. The age of Machilji. So, yeah.
There you go. Well, that was such a wonderful experience here in Anchorage, partly because of we were able to engage the Islamic community to be a part of the process.
Which took a while, but we did get them.
It did.
That was more than sort of a compliment. It was a nice thing. But that play, to me, even still needs a lot of work, you know? And I can't return to it until I feel like I can actually complete other scripts that are long, not 10-minute shorts.
Are you considering revisiting it?
Oh, I consider revisiting it every day. I consider burning it every day. I mean, you know, so that's about it.
Because I remember at the time you were commenting on your younger self, who the character is in the play. What's with her?
Yeah, she gets on my nerves, you know? And so you have to, it's a new exercise for me to be able to look back at it and stay consistent to that character, even though she was so personal to me at one time, stay consistent to creating her and finishing her and allowing her to grow. This is the biggest bonus about doing the clean house again, because what I'm finding is I've done it with one cast. I went through the entire, we did all the discussions. What do you think motivates you? What is this? What is that? To come here and hear the same questions by the same actors, even newer questions, people catching on faster in the certain parts of the writing than we did when we first went through it in Atlanta. It makes me, I said to somebody in the cast last night, when I hear a line delivered the same way it was delivered in the production in Atlanta, I think that is strong writing. If the director and the actors look at a thing, a paragraph or a line, and still get the same meaning from it, that means that the writer was so clear in what she intended, it cannot be argued.
Yeah, you're able to honor the playwright's real intent.
Right, then it's that's strong writing, you know? It still makes me feel bad about Shakespeare. He wrote no notes in anything for us. You know, you only have that one line that's like, exeunt as if pursued by bear, and that's it. And then the rest of it's just up to interpretation because Shakespeare was around for all his stuff. He was an actor in the company. He micromanaged everything in a way. And you know, but he pulled it off. And now we take it and we argue and we become scholars when it was made for the layman in the beginning.
Oh, yes, the groundlings were very important.
I mean, and it just makes me wonder about the strength of writing. What do you want? What makes it stronger? What makes it great? Should it be the same every time or not?
So. Although I do find it fascinating to see different productions of the same material. Often it does vary because of the qualities that you actors bring to it.
Sure. Though I will tell you, this is what's really interesting, too. Mm-hmm. People in Alaska have a different sense of humor.
Really?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I don't know how to explain it other than that. I just know that, especially dealing with this comedy. Mm-hmm. This is a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You take a look at it and you go, oh. And so I'm learning from my actors what's funny and what's not. And when I talk to locals, I say things, and I'm usually kind of funny back in Atlanta, but I don't get as many laughs here. So maybe I'm just not funny. Maybe that's it. Who knows?
You are funny. And you're funny in Portuguese, too.
Yeah, thank God. That's because you don't know what I'm saying.
That's right.
But, that's because I don't know what I'm saying. No, I'm kidding.
But you get it because of the way you say it.
Yeah. Well, that was really important. Sarah Rule, in the original manuscript, she had a different joke written to be translated into Portuguese. And I believe that her intention was to prove that no matter what, no matter where you are in the world, you can tell by the way somebody's standing and speaking that they're telling a joke. And I wonder if maybe through the course of workshopping the joke, they ended up with this one that we have in the script because there's more physical movement.
Yes.
As if somebody gave her feedback saying, you might want to put a little bit more into it. So, but she still gives you notes in the script going, whatever joke, if you find another joke in Portuguese that you want to tell, tell that
joke. As if you might.
Yeah, let me pull out my Portuguese joke book. Yeah, no. So.
No, jokes do, I guess, have a musicality to the setup, to the button on it.
Absolutely.
And so on.
Absolutely. God bless Carol Burnett and Lucille Ball.
Oh, yes.
Know?
They had it down. They were artists.
And I got in a lot of trouble for saying this, but I'm going to say this now. And for every feminist out there, I apologize now. I don't think women are funny. I don't think they're as funny as men. I just don't. And I don't know if it's because I've been bred in a society where we mostly had male-dominated comedy.
Sounds like sexism to me.
You can call it whatever you like. But it I don't know if it's because
it was an opportunity. You think it's something inherent in the genders.
Right. It might have been. It's just that my aesthetics were blended to male type masculine kind of comedy. But then I take a look at Carol Burnett.
Depends on the woman.
Well, of course. Well, I don't know if that was a joke. Never mind. You know what? You know, I'm not talking.
You're the
to you
only
anymore,
one though. Laughing, Dick. Yeah. Did you notice that?
You know, Dick, I noticed that you've been silent through most of this interview.
Oh, that's, I'm trying to help out. I'm trying to do the best for the show I possibly can.
It's an honest to God feeling for me. So when I run into a woman who can make me laugh repeatedly, mm-hmm. I go, okay. Not that I'm a complete judge, but I just don't normally laugh with women. And that's what's so great about Sarah Rule's script. There's so many opportunities for women, the female characters, to be funny. And Rule, obviously, has a great classic sense of comedy. I mean, she's brought the elegance of comedy back to mm-hmm. me with this script that has been gone for a long, long time. Maybe it's just been in the last 8 years. I enjoy that. And I laugh because there's one male character in this script. One male actor has to put up with all the women. That's why I'm laughing at you sitting here quietly with the two women talking. And I know that you've been in a house with women, so you know how. That's why you're so quiet. You're a man who's been well educated. I always wonder how the male actor feels in this. And my last castmate, he was like, I'll just sit here. I mean, he had a female director, mm-hmm. you know, female cast.
Well, that's right, the same year. Right, Chris is directing
for us. Here's a female director, yeah. female cast. And the guy just kind of needs to just sit down. Just wait for us. We'll be with you in a minute. So that's the way it goes.
Right. Well, I know in the script it actually said, for the audition process, everybody should be able to tell a good joke.
Did you guys, when you held auditions, did you?
I don't
you?
Think Krista did that, but it was Sarah Rule's suggestion.
It's a pretty important. I was
did
told,
they do that in Atlanta?
I was told to tell a joke. I was actually yeah. told to tell the Portuguese joke in English.
Okay,
which is really not a funny joke, but I told it and I got a laugh and I was like, well, there you go. Of course, I also made them drink before I told them. So I'm funnier when you're drinking. I'm a lot more attractive when you're drinking too. Side of mine.
That's not true. Suhaila, for the radio audience, is a beautiful woman and very funny and talented.
She's been drinking, too.
She doesn't drink. How's she going to know?
Well, that's a good point. I wouldn't know the difference.
Nice.
So I guess it sounds pretty exciting to be a theater artist in Atlanta at this time. Lots going on.
It is. It's still hard. I tell this story quite often. I'm not sure people are aware of this. Atlanta really, it's a beautiful theater community. There's no competition. You're not trying to annihilate
others. It's very collaborative.
It's a very collaborative mm-hmm. community. And there are some members that would say that means you're not striving for more. If you don't have competition, what is your impetus to go forward? But the collaboration does create, you are at a comfortable feeling.
But it's the very soul of theater, really.
It is. Yeah. It is. But competition is good at the same time. It is what motivates you. I mean, without competition, we wouldn't have evolved, for those who believe in that. So you have to take a look at that. And mm-hmm. there's still constantly an insecurity to New York, to Seattle, mm-hmm. to Chicago, mm-hmm. to these theater communities that are renowned. And I think it stems from, there's a story that Atlanta was starting to really build itself up in the artist community. And it was in the late 60s. And they landed a great project with Europe that they were doing something with them. I don't know the full thing, but I'm sure if you Googled it, you'd be able to look it up. Mm-hmm. And they had a majority of our artists and a majority of our donors on a flight to Europe. And the plane went down and killed everybody. Cut off a major source of our funding and a major source of our contribution to the arts, which in a lot of ways put Atlanta probably about 25, 30 years behind itself. So it's still recovering from that moment, but it's gaining its momentum back up. But it is, I believe, what may have set us behind. So it's great to be part of this community now.
So it's it kind of in a renaissance period.
Definitely. And it just needs... Any theater, any artist community just needs to believe in itself. That's all you need to do. You don't Sure, there are the definite environments that are better for you to be in if you really want to make a career of being an actor or being a writer, et cetera, et cetera. But you really want to start from where you are first and build it up.
I think there's something to be said for that. Anchorage certainly has a rich and thriving artist community.
Right.
Although some people, you know, do feel the need and desire, and it's totally understandable to go to Los Angeles or New York or somewhere.
Sure. I mean,
test
we all
their wings.
Do. We all do. And it's also because those were told us to be the parameters that's our competition. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. I think another thing that's lacking for us as artists is that we don't know how to manage our money.
Hmm.
You know, and I think that you're in a capitalist country. And you're still an artist. You still have to be able to know how all of that works and still keep an integrity to the art. And I think that that's important to know.
Yeah, it's always been part of our mission to compensate our artists, even though very modest, of course.
Right, right. I mean, and everybody has
don't
that challenge.
Don't quit the day job kind
right,
of thing.
Exactly. And no. Everybody has that challenge everywhere. I mean, just because you go to New York doesn't mean that you're going to land a theater gig that supports you.
Well, speaking of competitions, even much more intense.
Yeah, it's completely saturated in there. So
you know, there's something to being the big fish in a smaller pond and playing all the great roles and so
sure,
on.
Sure, but you wonder if that's going to help you grow. You know, you got to keep growing, even as a person, as an artist and a person. So that's what
absolutely
makes you better.
True.
Yeah.
So you are growing.
God willing.
Yeah.
How you doing over there, Dick?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I can't think of any jokes, so I'm not going to say any.
Yeah, he's over there trying to think of a good joke to tell. And you have the whole male gender, because it has to be good, because we've already said the male
doing
well.
Does anyone have a joke that they want to share?
Oh, you haven't got time.
Oh, nice.
Well, we haven't got time. How much time do we have?
Actually, got a quickie.
If you have a quick joke, great. Or you can tell Portuguese.
You know, I don't know any jokes that I can tell on the air.
But if it's in Portuguese, they won't know it.
Let's see.
There may be some Portuguese people listening. I'll be careful here.
You know what? Then I can't, because all the jokes are dirty. That's the other thing about it. I have to tell you, the one thing I discovered from this script is the perfect joke is either racist or has a lot of sex in it. And that's what you get.
That's why people laugh.
That's why people laugh.
Yeah.
Because they don't, yeah, because we're too scared to discuss it in reality. So
there was that period of PC humor, and then nothing was very funny.
Well, that's why you need timing. If the jokes are bad, you need really good timing.
Well, that's what it's all about.
Politically correct humor is only funny when you're making fun of it. That's end of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Life was a lot more fun when we were being politically incorrect.
Yeah, when you're nasty, humor comes a lot easier.
Well, and body. Body's good.
Body is good. There's something. Vaudeville was body.
Absolutely.
Vaudeville was beautiful.
Shakespeare was body.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. We're a dirty bunch of people. We're a dirty species.
Suhaila, I am so delighted to have you back in Alaska.
Thank you very
and
much.
I'm looking forward to the clean house and the next time you come.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Dick.
Thanks, Suhaila.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks for being here.
Join us again next time.